Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Today, and we're shifting gears from what we talked about yesterday. So much turmoil going on in the world, but there very much is an awful lot of economic and financial turmoil as well, and it doesn't get the right play, and the play that it gets is completely distorted. You know, the recession is over. Well, some months back I wrote an article. I refer to the recession being over, the depression just beginning. Main Street is suffering. Wall Street never had it so good, but millions of ordinary people in America and around the world, you can't tell them that the recession is over. They're going through the hardest times of their lives. But I always mention Ellen's marvelous book, Web of Debt. A new edition came out a few months ago. It really is. It's the best analysis I ever read on the private banking system and how it usurped money creation power. It did it the old-fashioned way, you know, in the dead of night, and nobody was paying attention. But even if they did, they wouldn't have realized what was going on because these bandits are too clever. And then they got a so-called progressive Democrat to sign the bill, who claimed that he ruined his country later on. He knew damn well what he was doing. I mean, the guy was a college professor. He was an intellect. You know who he was. we don't have a dummy running America today, but he sure acts like a dummy, the things he's doing, including going to war again against Yemen. Ellen, are we connected?
We are. Hi, Stephen.
By the way, irony of ironies, a very disturbing irony, and we want to talk about the economy and public banks and all the rest, but we went to war on Yemen on the 19th of March. That was the 8th anniversary of the war on Iraq, both on the 19th of March. I just wonder whether they deliberately planned it on that day. Their way of celebrating.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of, if you read the underground, there's a lot of stuff about numerology and, I mean, about secret societies and their
numbers. I believe there are a lot of those around.
Yeah.
The kind you never hear reports about on CNN and the rest of them. And if anybody's got some good information, send it to me, and I'll plan a radio program. We'll spend a whole hour on them. But the economy is still a mess, Ellen, and the solutions are at hand, and nobody has done finer work explaining just how we could fix the mess we're in. But only one state never got in the mess because it did things right in the first place, and that's North Dakota. And there are other states that are at least considering the possibility of public banks. But that's a topic we just have to keep revisiting. So you explain the merits of public banking.
Well, there are actually 8 states now that have bills pending. One we didn't even know about was Louisiana.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
No, so there's Oregon, Washington, Illinois, Louisiana, if I can remember, Virginia, Massachusetts, Maryland. I feel like I left one out. Anyway, so the one that the Bank of North Dakota, as you mentioned, is the only state-owned bank in the country. I just learned something really interesting, totally on another topic. Japan has the largest publicly owned bank in the world, and you never hear about that. It's the Postal Bank.
Yeah, that's right.
What you do hear is that the Japanese are savers, and this is that they have a huge federal debt, much bigger than ours, but relative to their gross domestic product. But nobody worries about it because it's funded by the Japanese themselves. And the reason is it's through this postal bank where they put their deposits in the postal bank. It's very secure because it's government guaranteed. And what they invest their money in is the state's or the federal debt. So they get a guaranteed, a nice little return on their money, and it's very safe. And so all the citizens want to put their money in this postal bank. But there was all this push to privatize everything, and they privatized many industries, but they couldn't get the postal bank. And finally they did, and there's legislation pending. I mean, the legislation says that it's going to be privatized, but they haven't done it. I read that by 2010 they were going to be putting it up for making it public. In other words, putting the stock up for sale to private parties, but they didn't do it. And there's still all this controversy, and the irony is the reason they want to privatize it is that it's unfair competition to the private banks, because the private banks can go under and the public bank can't. But that's the whole point of a public bank, is that it's safe, secure, and it makes its investments, it uses its money in the public interest. It's not out there speculating and doing all these wild things that are designed to put bonuses and commissions and fees in the pockets of the bankers. It's there to serve the public interest, and nobody makes any special profits of it. I mean, there is some controversy because it's politically, anything government is owned is always subject to being politically manipulated. But in North Dakota, they protect against that by most of the governing board consists of bankers, and that we've been on conference calls with them, and they say we're not the development people. The development people have never seen a project they didn't like, but we're bankers, and we don't lend unless it's a good creditworthy loan. I mean, they're in the business of banking like any other bank. The only difference is their model is that they're there to serve the public interest. They can take a long-term view. They have a guaranteed deposit base, which is all the state's deposits by law go into the Bank of North Dakota. But their basic business is to partner with the local banks. So they're really there to strengthen the local banks. And it's the local banks that are getting squeezed out all across the country. They're the banks that would take an interest in local projects like low-cost housing, all the things that would serve the local community, but they can't because they don't have enough capital. But if they partner with the state bank, then the state bank comes in and provides the capital. I mean, it does it several ways. Either it can buy the loans off the local bank, which is what the function that the mortgage-backed securities, the whole collateralized debt obligations, that whole thing that fell apart, what it was there for was to buy loans off the books of the banks so they could make more room for more loans. They were selling off their loans to investors, and then they didn't care who they were making the loans to because it wasn't going to be their problem once the investors had it. So they characterized them as AAA when they really weren't. But in North Dakota, they keep the loans, or else the Bank of North Dakota keeps them, and it's very careful about what it buys. So anyway, it's a whole different system that's just more secure. But you can see this also in Germany. They had a very strong public banking tradition, and the reason it got privatized was the EU said that it wasn't fair competition, that these banks were too good. As somebody pointed out, it's like saying that the A students, it's not fair that they're getting straight A's because these other students can only get C's, and so we got to bring them down to the level of the failures. I mean, these banks can't fail, so we have to break their knees so that they can fail like the others.
Ellen,
they took away their government guarantees.
Don't bring the A students down to the other level of the class. Expel them. I mean, that's the idea with public banks. I mean, don't let public banks exist. I mean, they're sure they did. Oh, by the way, I don't know whether you know this. I just did a fast search for a public bank in Louisiana, and I ran across a website noting a biographical historical note, and I'll just read very quickly. It says the Louisiana legislature created the Louisiana State Bank. Are you ready for this? Did you know this?
No.
In March 1818, after the charter of the Louisiana Bank was about to expire. Well, down at the bottom of this paragraph, it says, its operation during the better part of the 1800s, et cetera, and so on, yada-da-da-da. It became the State National Bank in 1871 and was eventually liquidated in 1908. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, if I'm reading this right, Louisiana had a state bank, but no longer after 1908.
Yeah, actually, when the Bank of North Dakota was founded, there were, I think, six other states that tried it, but their banks failed because, you know, it was just too much heat from the big private bankers. But North Dakota managed to get theirs in, and it's, I mean, it's been a brilliant success. It's the only state that escaped the credit crisis, as you pointed out. They have the largest surplus relative to their population. I mean, there very few states have a surplus at all. I mean, most states are either they're underwater, or if they're managing to make their budgets because they've slashed their services. But not North Dakota. I read an article. They're sitting there thinking, shall we cut taxes, or shall we add services, or shall we build infrastructure? They didn't know what to do with the money. Everybody else is trying to figure out where to find the money. So the Bank of North Dakota has a return on equity of 25% to 26% over the last decade, which is huge. And by comparison, CalPERS, the California Pension Fund, lost 31% last year, and I think, or 2009 maybe, and lost 25% the year before. Or maybe it was reverse. Anyway, they're losing huge sums of money to Wall Street. So you can't say it's going to be any less safe to shift your investment over from the Wall Street investments where they are now into a state-owned bank. The only model we have is North Dakota, but their state-owned bank is extremely secure and extremely profitable.
You know, my feeling, my bottom line, Ellen, is the Fed's been around for nearly a century. Let's just cover the period of the Fed and say the last century. We gave the public bankers, which, of course, have turned out to be the biggest ones, we gave them a chance to get the system right. And without question, just over the period, it was pretty bad before the Fed, but especially since the Fed came created. And I've written about this, and I will resurrect that information in my other undertaking, which I haven't mentioned on here, and I'll hold off until it gets a little further along. But since the Fed was created, you know, the idea being to smooth out the business cycle and stabilize things and have this centralized control, so all of these ripples that we had before the Fed, we'd get rid of them. We wouldn't have these problems anymore. Well, they got worse because, and I forget the exact number, something like 19 recessions over the last, maybe it was 15, I don't have the number in front of me, over the last century, and of course we have the Great Depression, we have what we're going through now. We've given these guys a chance, and after a century, they proved that they cannot get it right, and one state, getting close to a century, has had the opposite system, and they proved that they can get it right. I think it's time to give the rest of the country a chance to try the North Dakota way. It certainly can't be. I mean, under the worst possible conditions, Ellen, it couldn't possibly turn out worse than what the Fed has done, and we both know
that it absolutely will be the opposite of what the Fed has done. We could have prosperity, inflation-free. We could cut taxes or maybe get rid of them altogether. As you wrote in Web of Debt back in colonial times, for 25 years, they didn't need any taxes because the state banks created their own prosperity. And who needed to take more money from private people when you could create it all on your own? Inflation-free. Well, the Fed, of course, has caused a lot of inflation. The Fed has caused all kinds of problems. They literally are a cancer destroying us.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely would be better for the people. It's the bankers that I think the reason we haven't done this before is that people just don't understand banking. I was just on a, I just did a number of presentations in Northern California. I was up there for a couple of weeks. And so I tried to do it in a PowerPoint with all my little charts and so forth. But it's so hard to get these concepts over. You need to boil it down to cartoons and sound bites. But I'm trying to figure out how I can put this into cartoons and make it credible. Anyway, it's just a very complicated subject. Everything you think is the way it is isn't the way it is. Banks don't lend their own money. They don't lend their depositors' money. What they really do is create credit on their books, bank credit, and they advance that. But they need the deposits. They need the deposits to clear the checks, and that's called liquidity. So they say either it's a solvency crisis or a liquidity crisis. I mean, they're using these huge words that you don't have a picture for what that means. But what it means is if it's a solvency crisis, they don't have the capital. And what the capital, the reason they need that is because the Bank of International Settlements imposed this requirement in 1988, interestingly, to bring down the Japanese banks, which they did succeed in doing, and the Japanese banks were then the largest creditors in the world, their own creditors. And now they're bringing back down the Postal Bank, which is the largest depository bank in the world, very successful, and they're trying to privatize that. And anyway, so that's the capital requirement, which is you have to have $8 of capital for $100 in loans, and capital is your own money. So it's not the deposits you get in, but it's either the money you get from your investors when they buy stock or your profits. So it's equity plus profits, whatever that's called. So they need to have $8 of capital. It's just an arbitrary rule, but they have to have that $8. Then they can create bank credit on their books of $100. But when the checks go out the door, they have to clear their checks through a clearinghouse, and that was set up as part of the Federal Reserve in 1913 because there was a great big bank panic before that in 1907, and the banks weren't trusting each other. They knew it was then we were on the gold standard, and they knew they didn't have the gold, so they figured the other banks probably didn't have it either. So when these checks came in, they wouldn't honor them. So that it was part of the Federal Reserve Act that these checks would clear through the Federal Reserve. So you had to have as much coming in as going out. But the money coming in wasn't really the money you were going to lend. That money belonged to your depositors. You're really creating the money. So it's all very complex at this point. So a liquidity crisis is when you don't have the money coming in. And what you can do then is borrow from other banks. And the Federal Reserve dropped the rate very low to 0.2%. That's a Fed funds rate. So banks are in this very privileged position of getting money almost for free, whereas the state and local governments are still getting it for 5%. And that's one of my arguments for a state bank, is that we too could be borrowing at 0.2% if we were a bank. But if the banks don't have the money to lend to each other, as happened in the fall of 2008, when they're actually borrowing from the money market, which is a shadow banking system. It's so complicated. And that froze because the LIBOR, because Lehman Brothers went bankrupt and the LIBOR rate, the rate at which banks borrow from each other internationally, went up to 5%, which was too much for them to make any profit if they're lending at that rate, or at 4% or whatever the mortgage rate was then. So credit just froze. So that's called a liquidity crisis. In other words, you lend the money first, and then you scramble around and find it. And if you can't find it, that's a liquidity crisis. And one thing banks can do that nobody else can do is borrow from other banks, get this instant liquidity. They have this instant credit line. whereas state and local governments have to keep these huge rainy day funds instead because they don't have those instant credit lines. So all state and local governments have huge amounts of money socked away that's just sitting there drawing a teeny bit of interest on Wall Street. Then Wall Street leverages it into many times that sum in loans. We could take that money back, be leveraging it ourselves into many times that sum in loans if we were a bank.
Oh, in your last article, most recent one, I know you've been away up in the Bay Area, but you wrote about how Wisconsin could solve its so-called problem. Well, of course, it created its own problem, so it ought to find a way to solve it without socking it to public workers. But anyway, that's what they did. But there's a debacle going on in the state court about it. That's another issue. But if I remember the number, I think you said they have $67 billion
mm-hmm.
in their rainy day fund. Well, if now isn't a rainy day, when in hell will a rainy day come?
Yeah, well, that's their pension fund. Yeah.
I mean, what kind of a rainy day are they waiting for? A tsunami? I'm sorry, Wisconsin will not be hit by a tsunami. Maybe deluges from up above on down. But if they don't need the money, when will they? Illinois, I know has billions in a so-called rainy day fund, and Illinois, we've mentioned this on the program before, per capita has the biggest debt problem in the country of all the states, and they're not using any of this money. What's it sitting there for? If it's never used, Ellen, why is it there in the first place?
Well, this in Wisconsin, it's the pension fund money is $67 billion, and it's obviously there for the pensions. They actually have one of the strongest pension funds in the country, but that's the very thing that Governor Walker wants to tap into. He's saying we're broke and the pension fund has all this money and the unions have squirreled that away and we want to get to it. But so you have these two. There was this great joke about there's a dozen cookies and the banker takes 11 of them and he points to the union, or points to the Tea Party guy, and he says to the Tea Party guy, he's trying to steal your cookie. They're fighting over the scraps, but so they're fighting over who gets the, either somebody's got to lose here, either the union people have to lose or the government has to lose. But there's another way to do it. Take that $67 billion, make it be the capital base for a bank, and then you can create many times that sum in loans, assuming you can find the deposits to back the loans, and you get the deposits from your own state revenues. If you follow the Bank of North Dakota model. So in North Dakota, the Bank of North Dakota has $4,000 per capita in deposits in the bank. And virtually all of them come from the state. They only about 1% are from consumers, so they're not really competing with the local banks at all for consumer deposits, and the municipal deposits also go in the local banks. So just from the state's own deposit, their payroll and everything the state does, all their monies are run through the Bank of North Dakota. They've come up with $4,000 per capita, and California has 37 million people, so in California, we could have $148 billion in deposits on the same model. So I don't remember what that works out to in Wisconsin. But anyway, they could have a huge amount of credit available, which they would then use to fund many programs.
Boy, they sure could. And these people aren't stupid, Ellen. We've talked about this before. They know the difference between good policies and bad policies. The fact that they don't abandon the bad ones for the good ones, it tells me that they have other motives in mind. I mean, they're part of the system that's destroying their own people. And I don't know whether the pressure is put on them or if they hope to retain their jobs because they have to please the people in the power structure who choose the politicians in the first place, maybe protect themselves from suffering an unfortunate accident or something like that. So they go along with the destructive system that profits the predators and harms their own people. And this is the dirty system that runs this country, and it always has, even before the Fed was the system that ran the country, but then they institutionalized it under the Fed, and ordinary people have come out on the short end ever since. And it's astonishing, and you've talked about it. Establishing the right system is not rocket science. It really is all that not complicated. I guess there are a lot of details. You need a banker to set up a bank. I'm not a banker. I wouldn't want to try to set it up without some expert help. But if I had the power to do it, I would get the support of people who knew the banking business, and we would set up the right kind of system, and we would change the destructive course that my city or my state or whatever was on, and begin on the right course. So I go into the doctor who'll properly diagnose your illness and tell you, yes, you're sick, but I think I know how to cure you. And from now on, we're going to do this as opposed to what you had been doing. And it'll take a little time, but, be patient, and I think all will turn out well. And it will, but it's not done.
Yeah. Well, the problem is the bankers obviously supply all the money to the politicians, and so they have to please the bankers. So anything that the bankers are going to be upset with is probably not going to pass. But in fact, a public bank supports the local banks. I mean, in North Dakota, it supports the local banks, and you can set it up that way. And so that's the first step in bringing them around, is to show the local bankers that this is going to provide the capital that they need. Oregon has made probably the most progress in this, and or has the most experience in how to talk to them. And so there's one banker who's on our team, our Public Banking Institute, or he's not actually in the Public Banking Institute, but he's advising us. And he was talking about in Oregon there's one project that they have right now, a potential project. It's low-cost housing, and 70% of the renters, of the low-cost renters, would be getting income guaranteed by the federal government. So this is a very low-risk project, but the local banks just don't have enough capital to build such a large project, to invest in such a large project. But if the state bank came in and partnered with them, they would. So what you're doing is keeping all that federally guaranteed money in the state instead of sending it out to Wall Street. There are also VA and FHA loans, student loans, different things that are guaranteed by the government that are easy money. I mean, they're like guaranteed money that we're giving away to Wall Street because we don't have banks big enough to service those loans. And we could keep all that money in state. And then that secure money, your secure profits, those profits that you got, like 3% on the VA and FHA loans, you can then use that money for things that are a little more risky, like startup businesses, et cetera, local businesses that need the money. And if you lose the whole thing, it's just a wash. You haven't dipped into anybody else's money.
Oh boy, Ellen, we need you running things. I think I think of that with a case. Well, you know, your initiative, and I didn't mention it. I should have at the top of the program that you head the Public Banking Institute, and there's a website. Listeners can go to it. Just Google Public Banking Institute would be the easiest way to do it, and get information on your initiative and public banking in general. And in an article that I've written, I haven't gotten it out yet because I've been so focused on Middle East uprisings, and most recently Libya, of course, and in the last week, a little over a week, what's going on in Japan, mm-hmm. that by no means is resolved. All this misinformation claiming that things are stabilized and everything is under control. It is not stabilized, and it is not under control. It is an unprecedented calamity going on, mm-hmm. but that's another topic, and we've talked about it. I'll come back to it again. But, of course, the news is just suppressing the facts so people won't worry, like their food is irradiated. And Don't worry. It's not enough to harm you.
Mm-hmm.
Do people actually believe this stuff? Well, any amount of radiation is enough to harm you, and especially if you live close to this plant that's spewing radiation like crazy. Anyway, I forget the point I was going to make. Oh, well, Public Banking Institute, you hit it, and we're going to take a break in a moment. When we come back, explain that to listeners and the information you have and what you hope to do with it. But my hope, Ellen, is that somehow you can parlay that initiative into others learning about it, wanting to get involved, and wanting to do something in their own areas to establish a public bank. That would really be wonderful. Let's take a break at the bottom of the hour and come back and talk about the Public Banking Institute. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Tune in to Citi's Grace Notes, where we'll be bringing you inspired voices from around the world, creative voices from various fields and backgrounds, new sounds, new music, and new ideas with your host, Citi. Every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Dr. Cheryl Selman. I invite you to join me every Monday at 2 p.m. to listen to What Women Must Know, a show with a purpose to empower women with truthful information and in-depth, honest, candid conversations regarding holistic solutions for their bodies, their hormones, and pertinent life issues. So that's 2 p.m. every Monday on Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Virginia Reed, and I'll see you this Friday talking about Long Day's Journey into Night. We'll have both the director and the main actors, both male and female. This is Virginia Reed. I'm very happy I'm back, and I can't wait to see you all this Friday again on PRN.
Let your imagination fly. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Take a trip with me through the literary landscape of Writer's Voice. Join the tour and the conversation as we talk with writers of all genres about matters that move us and make us think. Right here on the Progressive Radio Network, every Saturday at noon.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
I digress just for a brief moment because I sure want to talk about public banking, but shortly before I went on air, just about ready to go on air with you, a resident in the condominium that I live in sent me an email that a channel was added to our cable lineup. We all get it whether we want it or not, and when you live in a condo, you do what the condo board decides for good or bad. Unfortunately, in my building, it's more often bad than good, but this is good. I do a fair amount of media critiques, and today, about an hour before this program, I went on, I believe for the fourth time, on Russia Today TV, did it via Skype, and they're a marvelous operation where they'll invite me on, and I can speak as freely with them as I can on this program. Or if anybody else asks me to come on, the only thing with them is they have short segments. So we did about 5 minutes in the past. It ran 7, 8, 9 minutes live, and then they archive it and they repeat it, but they'll usually cut it down a little bit for repeat broadcasts. I don't know why they just don't show the whole thing, but they do what they do. But I was on live. I've always been on live. And the person in my building mentioned to me that Russia Today was added to our lineup. I had no idea, because up to now we've been stuck with the likes of Fox and CNN and MSNBC, and they do nothing but manage news and infotainment and I mean nonsense, garbage, worthless stuff. Russia Today is the real thing. If anybody is listening, I'm sure I've got some listeners in Chicago. If you have Comcast, and they're the major provider, Russia Today is in the lineup, and I think depending on where people live, it might be on different channels. I'm not certain the way the cable companies do it. I think different things can show up on different channels in different parts of the area. But I'd recommend the listeners check with the Comcast if you have them. And see, in fact, Comcast anywhere in the country, they are the biggest cable provider. If we have it here in Chicago, and it apparently just began, very likely it's available throughout the whole Comcast service. But Russia Today is night and day different from the CNNs of the world. I'll have to watch more to judge just how good it is. But the little exposure I've had to it is marvelous. I mean, if they put me on, how bad can they be?
I've actually been on it a couple of times, yeah.
Have you been on? Oh, yeah. I mean, if they get us, can you imagine either you or I invited on CNN or one of the others to talk about what we discuss on this program? I mean, if anybody did it, Ellen, they'd be fired.
Yeah, and it seems so obvious to me that it really is the media that controls everything, because they're... Why are we not rebelling as we should be over this whole, so many people have lost their homes and lost their jobs, and it's criminal that they've been deprived of those things, and yet people don't seem to realize. They think it's just them personally, that they made some bad investment decisions, or they just weren't good enough to get the job. I mean, everybody knows the economy's down, but nobody knows who to blame, because it's all been concealed, and it's concealed by the media. I was just thinking that when I was reading about this Public Bank of Japan. I mean, I have been researching this subject for 10 years, and I never came across it before. And I read it was a long dissertation on it, and it says, funnily enough, I don't know, the commentaries say that there are no public banks in Japan, although they've skipped over the postal bank, which is the largest public bank in the world by deposits. So, I mean, they just say oddly that it's not mentioned. So if you were to research something like public bank, there's not even a word for it. In fact, that's one issue. That's one problem we've had talking to people. It's like, well, what do you mean by a public bank? Isn't a public bank a bank where the stock has gone public? But if you say state-owned bank, then that means the state, and it could also be a municipal. I mean, it could be a county bank or a city bank. It doesn't have to be the state. If you say government-owned bank, then people think of the federal level. I mean, it's just there's not even a term for researching it. So, of course, you're going to miss all this information. It's all characterized in a certain way that we have to have capitalism and competition and free competition, and that competition is good, and anything government-owned is going to unfairly compete because they have advantages that the private things don't have.
You put your finger on it. I consider far and away the number one problem in the country is the corporate-dominated media, because they will not give us the information we need to know what we need to be aware of to serve our own welfare. They deny us that information. So they put out false information. They suppress the most important things that we need to know. And this is how the public gets influenced to go along with things that actually are against their own self-interest. So, I mean, the idea that a Tea Party could come into existence, that really I think the majority of people who belong to the Tea Party or in some way are associated with it are very decent people, ordinary working people, and they're going through hard times, but they're putting the finger on the wrong culprit. The culprit is basically the power structure. I refer to it as the government corporate cabal that literally is sucking the wealth from ordinary people up to the top. And, of course, it's led by the Wall Street bandits. But it's the whole corrupted system and the government the federal government, but really at all levels of government. If you've got a Rahm Emanuel as the next mayor of Chicago, then what the devil is the difference between Chicago or Washington, D.C.? I mean, you got the same kind of people running the system, benefiting the corporate interests, and the supporting imperial wars and the rest of it, and the media lies to us about what we need to know. Unless we could have something like this program reaching millions of people so they would get accurate information, then let them decide what they feel is best and what isn't best. And if enough people see that government at all levels are pursuing policies that are hurting them, well, I think Henry Ford said it very well a century or so ago when he was speaking, I think, about the bankers, saying if the public knew a quarter of what was going on, we'd have a revolution in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain if that was before or after the Fed was created, but I think it was somewhere around that time. Well, Jesus, I mean, he couldn't imagine what the devil is going on today, and I certainly don't consider him a saint. But at least he paid his workers well. And his feeling was, well, who's going to buy my cars if I don't pay my workers enough to go out and do it?
Yeah, I grew up in Dearborn, Michigan, which is Henry Ford City.
Oh,
we
that's right.
Henry Ford. He provided us all kinds of benefits.
I don't remember him, but I remember Henry Ford Jr.?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't remember Henry Ford either.
Well, I mean, there was another Ford running. I think there's a second or third generation in charge now, and I forget the name of the man who is the CEO or whatever. But I think it was a Henry Ford Jr., the son of Henry Ford, who ran the company back in the 50s and 60s. And I imagine he's long gone now. And the original Henry is, of course, he's been long gone for a long time. But it's bad. I mean, he was Hitler's favorite capitalist. I mean, talk about an imprimatur you do not want. Well, I mean, Hitler kept a picture of him in his office. But that aside, he believed in paying his workers a decent wage because they couldn't go out and buy his cars. They only cost a few hundred bucks back then when they first came out. I mean, things were a lot cheaper until the Fed got a hold of the system and turned the dollar into less than a nickel. I mean, the Fed has worked very well for the rich guys, Ellen, but they sure haven't worked very well for the ordinary folks. But it's the media that is the heart of the problem, because they put out the bogus information and people don't know the truth that they need to know.
And people don't even know that they should be looking. Most people are into sound bites and they just turn the TV on briefly and get maybe the first 5 minutes of the news just to see what the hot items are. And so if it's not framed in those 5 minutes, you don't even know to look. And the issues are always framed as left versus right, and nobody looks at the end. It's like the 12 cookies. Nobody looks at the 11 that got stolen by the corporate banking cartel.
Crooks. That's what they are.
Yeah, the crooks.
Oh, that's right, because nobody talks about it. And you remember the propaganda back in 2008 that, you know, the only way to get us out of this terrible economic/financial dilemma is we have to save the big Wall Street banks. Nary a mention that they're the ones who caused it in the first place, and they did it deliberately. They had an agenda in mind because they wanted to get rid of competition, and the overall system wanted to create a crisis to be able to do things that you cannot do during ordinary times when things are going on normally. So if we didn't have this economic crisis, then they couldn't have abolished collective bargaining in Ohio and Wisconsin. The states, including under Democrat governors, Jerry Brown, where you are in California, me, Pat Quinn in Illinois. I mean, they're really hammering ordinary workers with budget cuts, besides massive layoffs and benefit cuts and all the rest. And I mean, they really wanted, and the one of the ultimate aims is to get rid of public pensions. On your web of debt website, you don't have the cartoon, but you got the wonderful commentary on your your newest Wisconsin article, a cartoon about a public worker sitting at a bar saying they're trying to take my pensions away, and talking to a private sector worker asking what's a pension.
Uh-huh. I know the pitch is that the public sector workers are getting too good a deal. But the thing is, we should all have that good deal, and we could all have that good deal. So that's what the whole public banking thing's all about. And we have to be so careful to go right down the middle. In when the Bank of North Dakota was set up, it was the nonpartisan league was the party that got this in. They very carefully were saying this is not a left and a right. In fact, North Dakota is a very Republican state, although this seems sort of like a socialist thing to have a state-owned bank. But it's Republican in the sense that it's go local, get the money back into the state, keep North Dakota's money in North Dakota, or keep California's money in California. When you're talking about how the prices have gone up, when I went to Berkeley, tuition was free. It's now $12,000 a year. When I went to UCLA law school, I just learned this because somebody called and was soliciting donations, and he said he had a chart for what tuition used to be. And I said, because I was sure it was real cheap, and I said, so what was it? I graduated in 1977. He said, $500 a year. That's just what I thought. It is now $40,000 a year for tuition.
UCLA.
A government school, a state-owned school, UCLA, for law school. It's 35 for in-state and 45 for out-of-state, so average 40. Unbelievable. I mean, how could you possibly, you would get out of school $200,000 in debt. Now, how are you going to pay that off? You have to go to work for the big corporations. Who else is going to pay you that kind of money?
Well, you know.
So they've got you from the minute you walk out the door.
Oh, they sure do. And an article that I have written some months back on the student loan debt racket, where so many and increasingly greater numbers, many, many thousands of kids who are able to borrow money do so to go to college, and they come out of school impossibly indebted, and a great number, maybe the majority of them, end up indebted for life. Because
they can't go bankrupt.
They cannot go bankrupt.
Unbelievable.
That's right.
A big company can go bankrupt. Why cannot a small student with totally vulnerable to the world, young person who doesn't even know what he's getting into when he signs the papers, not go bankrupt?
It's shocking. It's shocking and it's criminal. And the laws got worse and worse. And the latest version was under Obama sometime last year, claiming, you know, this marvelous thing we did, revising the student loan system to help students out so much. It just tightened the screws more, benefiting these predators like Fannie Mae. We all know about Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and those guys. Well, Sally Mae, the big student loan predator, operating the same way, but they have an even bigger racket than J.P. and Goldman, because once you're in their clutches, and the companies associated with them, the debt collection companies, one of them is the biggest in the country, I forget the name offhand, but these people have you forever. They'll garnish your wages, they'll take your Social Security, they'll take your home away. You cannot get out of debt, and the debt can be so enormous, plus the interest, it's like being in debt forever, Ellen, and if you're lucky, maybe you can just keep up with the interest payments, but you can't do very much with the principal. For a lot of these these kids into their adulthood. And my suggestion is leave the country and go someplace else. I don't know whether they can garnish your wages in Bulgaria or someplace. Who knows?
Yeah, but they're coming from Bulgaria to here, unfortunately.
They're going in the wrong direction. Well, I don't know about Bulgaria, but coming here is a very bad choice, especially now. There was a time when coming here was a wonderful place to come, but it's not that anymore.
I think Sally May, though, I thought that, I might be wrong, but the way I understood the recent changes in the education thing was that Sally May was cut out. And, I mean, they're not going to underwrite Sally May anymore. And
no.
That it's the federal government that is making the loans directly. So the federal government is acting as a bank in that sense. I wrote an article on that the federal government was finally actually going into the banking business, which they should.
Oh, but Sally May is still very much involved. I don't know to what degree the government could be. If the government is involved, there's a Sally May connection, I'm sure. I'm sure. Cause Sally
I thought it was the Sally May people that were complaining about the new bill because they were going to be...
I'm not current on that, but there's no question that Sally May is doing very well. Thank you very much. You know, maybe they don't get 100% of what they want, but they're doing so well. They're still allowed freely to rip off these kids who have to borrow money from them. So, I mean, they're very much around. I think their stock. I don't check this stuff, but I think their stock is doing just fine. How it's been in the last few days or weeks, I have no idea. The Japanese ripple may cause some problems ahead. That I don't know. It did for a few days, and it may ahead because it certainly can't do the world any good financially. Japan's economy alone will take a big hit because of this. You know, I mean, everything comes back eventually, but you can't do to a country what happened to Japan and not have it really affected just terribly. And Japan is not exactly a small country. The world's third biggest economy now. So they take a major hit. And there are ripples, just like a tsunami, that hits every place else to some degree. So we'll see.
Yeah. Speaking of which, California used to be the world's sixth largest economy, so it should have its own bank, central bank. That would be my argument. So the Public Banking Institute grew out of I started writing on this subject a couple of years ago, and then I got flooded with all this email, and I was complaining because I couldn't answer it all. And they're all asking for what can we do? You know, they all want advice and they want to get involved. And so somebody said, why don't you set up a Google group, which I did, or he set it up actually. And then that grew and got to be very active. And so we had a workshop last December when I gave some presentations up in the Bay Area. And we decided to form this institute in order to have sort of an organized way that we could, when people want to know what can we do, we can tell them when we already have a... So we formed this institute, and it's just taken off. It's remarkable, the amount of interest. And we've got, you know, it's all sectioned off by states now, so we've got reps in different states. And we've got a newsletter, and it's sort of a real policy, and it's all for education. And we're being very careful not to be... not to be left or right, because you have to go right down the middle, because the bankers and the small business people are going to be on the right, and the unions obviously are on the left, and everybody is served by this. Everybody's helped by this. It's just a way to get the credit back. The credit has obviously collapsed in the whole country, and that's why we have some call it a recession. You know, it's a recession if you have a job, it's a depression if you don't. But we have a depression going on for a lot of people worldwide because credit has collapsed, because the Wall Street big money center bank system collapsed. And so we've got to regenerate all that. And if you do that, you will serve everybody, not just the left, not just the right. They always pit us against each other so that we don't see the larger issue. But the larger issue is we can have our own banking system that's just like their banking system, with all the perks of their banking system, without the liabilities, because we're not going to give it all away to big CEOs or investors or whatever. We're going to give it to the people. We're going to use it for public purposes.
Are you getting more response, more people around the country showing an interest in this, Ellen?
We're getting a huge response. It's really quite remarkable how many people are interested, and they all want to know what to do. So now we've got sort of a plan. We can tell them what to do or who to talk to, and we're still doing research. It's just so interesting. It's one of these things where once you see the world in a different light, you have to look at the whole world all over again. You know what I mean? When you have this new tool for looking at things.
Oh, absolutely.
It changes your whole historical worldview.
And I agree with you. It's not a left or right issue. It's a good policy versus a bad policy issue. And that has nothing to do with anything else. And this very definitely is a good policy. And people need to know about it. And then it really is up to people and individual states and cities to decide what they want to do. So nobody's cramming anything down anyone's throat. The idea is to get the information out there and let people know about it and use it. And sometimes it's amazing. People who should know this stuff maybe don't know enough, if anything. But if they know it, then the word starts getting around. And, I mean, the idea that some states, new ones, are considering, eight states considering it, well, we have to hope, Ellen, that one or more of them will go along with this thing. And that could really be like dynamite unleashing the logjam that just might get others to go along. It won't happen overnight, but it would be marvelous if this happened. And
the fact that there are that many states does help, you know. Other states then think, well, we should be doing that too. That's why everybody that's joining in this sort of campaign, that's the thing. Well, our state should be doing that too, or looking at that at least. I realize the state I left out was Hawaii. So the Public Banking Institute, meaning me, I mostly filed testimony in the Hawaii legislation, or the hearings, and in the Maryland hearings. So now we have our whole little thing down, you know. We're ready to go.
And it's spreading. My goodness, I mean, Louisiana since 1908. There must be somebody in the state who discovered the website that I did. I sent you a link to it. There must be somebody saying, well, why on earth did we get rid of this thing in 1908? I mean, why did we do that? There's nobody alive who can tell us today. But maybe it's time to bring it back and give it a try again. I wonder how, I mean, it must have done some good all those years. So, I mean, it's amazing that somehow it would get become abandoned, but it was. But maybe they'll resurrect it now. I want to see I want to see a number two state do it. So North Dakota has a twin.
Yeah, so do I.
but it would be wonderful, Ellen, if an important state established. I mean, dare we think California or in Illinois or in New York? But any important state. I mean, even the state of Washington.
Oregon. Yeah, Oregon might do it first. Though.
Or even Maryland, right? And Maryland would be lovely, right next door. I mean, all the politicians live in Maryland. What if they had a state bank where they lived?
In Oregon, the treasurer, they've been working on this for 2 years, and they have laid their groundwork very carefully. But the state treasurer is actually behind it, whereas originally he was opposed. So that is the guy you have to get, the treasurer, bring him around. But he's behind it, but unfortunately they've kind of watered their bill down so much in order to please the bankers. But that's what you have to do, and then you start small and you show what this model can do, and then you say, well, as long as we're doing that, let's open it up to this, and then it gets bigger. Hopefully that'll work.
Oh, I think it'll work, Ellen. You convinced me a lot long time ago, and I think if anyone reads Web of Debt, and I just can't imagine why everyone listening to this program does not have their own copy of Web of Debt and have read it, because if you haven't, that will really be a revelation. And there it is. You've got the blueprint right there on what doesn't work and what does work, with all of the historical context, which is very important, because you show, you know, where we've done this.
I want to say, and so we've also aligned with the Move Your Money people, and with the Center for State Innovation the Center for State Innovation, and the Progressive Democrats of California are bringing a resolution, or presenting it at their convention in April.
Oh, that's marvelous.
A lot of groups are coalescing around this issue.
Oh, that is absolutely marvelous. You know, I think you have really... Ellen, you're going to be famous. I swear to God, you are going to be famous. I'm trying to think of other who. We're out of time. I'm trying to think of famous heroic figures in American history. People who literally came out of nowhere. I mean, William Lloyd Garrison on slavery. I'm trying to think of the most important woman in the suffragette movement. I forget who the most important figure was, but people like that, or Martin Luther King on civil rights in the 50s and 60s. Ellen, you are going to go down in history, not just for writing a colossal book, but starting a movement that someday I think will bear fruition. And it will be...
It really is sort of a leaderless movement, and that's why it might work, because it's just little... It pops up here and there, and then it all kind of coalesces around these whirlpools of interest.
I think it can work, and I think... I mean, it's moving forward. I mean, it's important just to keep it going, Ellen, and if that's done, and it really has a lot of momentum, then there is fruition to be born down the road from this. Oh!
Thanks.
I'm excited just thinking about it. We are out of time. We'll pick it up again next month, and the latest chapter, it's like a soap opera, Ellen, the latest chapter in advancing the right kind of banking system for this country. It's the cure that will fix the economic financial crisis, and at least more people know about it, so hopefully the solution is at hand, and it's going to happen at some point. Ellen, my great thanks as always. I look forward to next time.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks, Ellen.
Always fun.
And join us, of course, three times a week, Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And next week, three more fine programs with fine guests lined up. And you can listen live, you can listen archived, and you can get information on the most important things that everyone needs to know. That's what this program is dedicated to, and Progressive Radio Network. That's why you should make it a regular habit.